We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Story one, I used to work at Disneyland. Nothing glamorous, just a night janitor, cleaning up after guests once the park closed. It wasn't bad. Most of the time, I was stationed in Tomorrowland or Main Street, places that still felt normal after dark. But once, just once, I got sent to Toontown. I never liked Toontown. Even during the day, there was something off about it. The buildings were exaggerated, twisted in ways that looked fun when the sun was out, but felt unnatural at night. It was like stepping into a cartoon world that wasn't meant for people. But rules were rules. And when my supervisor told me I was covering Toontown for the night shift, I didn't argue. The park had been closed for hours when I started. It was just me, the quiet hum of distant maintenance crews, and the occasional crackle of my radio. I made my way past the Roger Rabbit ride, my footsteps echoing in the empty streets. Everything was still. Too still. The first thing I noticed was the silence. Disneyland was never truly quiet. Even after closing, you'd hear music from maintenance crews working in other areas, the beeping of golf carts, or the distant laughter of workers messing around. But Toontown was dead silent. No music, no workers. Just me and those warped, frozen buildings staring down at me. I started sweeping near Goofy's Playhouse, trying to shake the unease settling in my stomach. I told myself it was just the weird proportions of the place, the way everything looked stretched and distorted in the dim lighting, the way the fake doors and windows seemed almost watchful. And then I heard it, a footstep, not the distant shuffle of another worker, not the chirp of a radio, a single deliberate footstep somewhere behind me. I froze. I turned expecting to see one of the costume characters, maybe a security guard messing with me. But there was no one. Just the empty street, the towering, cartoonish buildings, and that eerie silence. I took a slow breath, gripping my broom a little tighter. Maybe I'd imagined it. The acoustics in the park were weird sometimes. Sounds bounced in ways you wouldn't expect. I kept sweeping. Another footstep. Closer. I turned again. Still nothing. My heartbeat picked up. I wasn't new to working overnight shifts. I'd been at the park long enough to know the usual sounds. The maintenance workers, the occasional rats scurrying near the food carts, the wind rustling through the trees. But this wasn't that. I swallowed and reached for my radio. Hey, anyone else in Toontown right now? I kept my voice steady, casual, static. No response. I tried again, more static. The radios weren't the best, but I'd never had dead air like that before. It was like the signal just died here. I told myself it was nothing and kept working. I moved to the fountain near Mickey's house, trying to ignore the growing sense that I wasn't alone, that something was watching me. Then I heard it again, but this time it wasn't a footstep. It was a giggle, high-pitched, childlike. It came from somewhere ahead of me, near the fake cartoon houses. I stood there, gripping my broom so tight my knuckles went white. It had to be a recording, right? Some malfunctioning speaker playing a leftover sound effect. Another giggle. Closer this time. I scanned the buildings, my eyes landing on Minnie's house. The windows were dark, but something about them made my skin crawl. The laughter came again, soft but sharp, like it was coming from just inside the door. I took a step back. The doorknob turned. I ran. I didn't care about my broom, my radio, or the fact that I'd probably get in trouble for abandoning my post. I sprinted back through Toontown, past the twisted lampposts and eerie frozen buildings, not stopping until I hit the main walkway leading to Fantasyland. Only then did I dare to look back. Toontown was dark, still, and empty, just like it had been. But I knew what I heard. I never worked Toontown again. Never asked to. Never had to. And I never, ever stayed after dark. Story 2, I used to work the box office at Disneyland. It wasn't a bad job, mostly selling tickets, dealing with families trying to smooth out mix-ups with their reservations, and the occasional irate dad yelling because he didn't read the fine print. It was repetitive, but easy. Until that one night, it was late, maybe an hour before close. The crowds had thinned out, just a few stragglers still trickling in, the kind who either had late reservations or just wanted to get a few hours in before the park shut down. I was tired, my back hurt, and I was already thinking about clocking out when she walked up to my window. She was small, maybe mid-30s, with stringy brown hair pulled into a messy bun. Her clothes were wrinkled, like she'd been traveling all day. She had that look I'd seen 100 times. Exhausted, overwhelmed, running on fumes. "One ticket, please," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "Sure," I replied, clicking through the system. "Just one?" She nodded, then reached into her purse, rummaging for her wallet. That's when she set the box down on the counter. It was a small wooden box, polished but a little worn around the edges, with a simple brass latch. Nothing about it seemed odd at first. People carry all sorts of things with them. But then I saw the picture. A little girl, maybe 6 or 7, smiling with a pair of Mickey ears on her head. The photo was taped to the lid, and beneath it were 2 dates, birth and death. My stomach tightened. I already knew what it was before I saw the name etched into the brass plate on the front. It was an urn. I felt a chill crawl up my spine. I don't know how she got past security with it. You're not supposed to bring in remains, but people try all the time. They want to scatter ashes on the rides, Haunted Mansion, pirates, even It's a Small World. Most of the time, it just gets vacuumed up at the end of the night. "Ma'am," I said, forcing my voice to stay calm, "I can't let you take that inside." She froze. Her hand stopped digging through her purse, and for the first time she really looked at me. Her eyes were sunken, dark circles etched deep underneath, like she hadn't slept in weeks. There was something off about her expression, like she wasn't all the way there. "It's just her first trip," she said softly. A shiver ran through me. I swallowed. "I understand, but park policy, she never got to come." She wasn't looking at me anymore. She was looking past me, behind me. I glanced over my shoulder, my pulse quickening, but there was nothing there, just the dimly lit interior of the ticketing booth. When I turned back, she was still staring, her eyes fixed on something just over my shoulder. My skin prickled. Then the box moved. I swear to God, it slid an inch across the counter. Not much, just a tiny shift, like someone had nudged it. I snapped my gaze back to her, my breath caught in my throat. Her lips trembled. "She doesn't want to wait anymore." I reached for the phone under the counter, pressing the silent call for security. My fingers were ice cold. "Ma'am, I need you to stay here for a moment," I said carefully. She didn't respond, just kept staring, her breathing shallow. Then a sound, a soft giggling sound. It came from inside the box. I felt my stomach drop. The woman's eyes flickered with something. Recognition? Relief? She smiled. The giggling grew louder, closer. I pushed my chair back, my pulse hammering against my ribs. It wasn't possible. It wasn't real. A tiny knock sounded from inside the box. Tap, tap, tap. The woman exhaled, shuddering. "She's excited!" I shot to my feet. "Security's on the way," I choked out. She didn't care. Her fingers trembled as she reached for the latch. I didn't think. I just reacted. My hand shot out, slamming down on the box, holding the lid shut. The giggling stopped. For a second, everything was dead silent. Then from beneath my palm, something pushed back. I yanked my hand away. The woman flinched like I'd burned her. She grabbed the box, clutching it to her chest, eyes wild with grief. "You don't understand," she whispered. "She just wants to go home." I heard footsteps, security finally. 2 uniformed officers appeared at my booth, their expressions neutral but firm. "Ma'am," one of them said, I need you to come with us. She hesitated, her grip on the box tightened. Then she looked past me one last time. Her face crumpled. Okay, she whispered. She let them take her. The last thing I saw was the box, clutched against her chest, her fingers trembling over the latch. As they led her away, I thought I heard something. A soft, muffled knock. And then, just barely audible, a child's voice. Please, Mommy, just one ride. I never worked another closing shift again. Story 3. I used to work night shifts at Animal Kingdom, specifically out on the safari ride. It was a weird job, in the sense that it felt like a completely different world at night. Most people only ever saw the park during the day, when it was all families, strollers, and the carefully controlled illusion of an African savanna. But after closing, that was a whole different thing. At night, the park was dark. I'm not talking about the kind of dim glow you get from streetlights or emergency exit signs. I mean true darkness, the kind that swallows everything, where even your own hands in front of your face look like shadows. The only light came from our work trucks, dim security lamps, and the occasional moonlight filtering through the trees. I had been working there for a while and was comfortable with the job. Comfortable enough, at least, to be alone out in the middle of the ride path at 3 a.m., trying to get some equipment working near the Hippo River. That was the spot where guests would pass by in the daytime, looking down at the water, watching the hippos float lazily or yawn, wide enough to make kids squeal in delight. But at night, the hippos were different. I was crouched near a small control panel, flashlight in my mouth, trying to fix an issue with one of the ride's sensors. Something about a false positive being triggered, making the system think there was an obstruction when there wasn't. Annoying, but nothing I hadn't dealt with before. The air was thick, humid, and filled with the distant noises of the savanna animals settling in for the night. Every now and then, I'd hear something move in the underbrush nearby, but I knew better than to let it get to me. Most of the animals were either enclosed or naturally avoiding humans. At least that's what I told myself. Then out of the absolute blackness, right behind me, a sound so loud, so impossibly close, that my entire body locked up in pure terror. It was a hippo, and it was right there. My flashlight dropped from my mouth, clattering uselessly onto the metal panel. My brain completely froze, unable to process anything except the immediate, gut-wrenching understanding that I was not supposed to be here right now. Hippos aren't just some lazy water cows. They are killers. They are fast. They are territorial. They can bite a human in half without even trying. And I had no idea where exactly it was. I couldn't see anything. But from the way the sound ripped through the air, it had to be within 5 feet of me. My mind went into overdrive. If it was in the water, I was safe, probably. If it was on land, I was already dead. I couldn't breathe. I didn't move. Every single muscle in my body screamed to run, but I knew better. Running would trigger it, make it charge. And if I ended up in the river, that was it. There would be no screaming, no struggle, just the snap of a jaw and the water turning red. I felt a shift in the air behind me, a presence. It was there. I was alone. No radio, no backup. My truck was at least 50 feet away, parked on the ride path with the headlights off. No one would be coming by until morning. If I died, they'd find my truck still running, my flashlight lying in the dirt. Maybe some drag marks near the river's edge. Maybe nothing at all. I was shaking so badly I thought it would hear me. Then, another shift, something heavy, wet, brushing against the foliage. I wanted to turn my head, just enough to see, but I didn't. I kept my breathing as shallow as possible. Then, from just beyond the blackness, a splash. I waited until I was sure it had gone back into the river, until I was sure I wasn't about to feel teeth clamp down around my torso and drag me under. And then slowly, I reached down, grabbed my flashlight with a hand that barely worked, and turned it on. Nothing. Just the empty river. Trees. Bushes. The night. Thick and suffocating. I don't even remember walking back to my truck. I just remember the way my hands shook on the wheel as I sat there, headlights on, staring at the river, knowing that something had been right there. Right there. I never worked near the Hippo River alone again. Story 4. I worked at Disney for a couple of years, bouncing between different roles, merchandise, attractions, custodial, whatever they needed. For a week, I got deployed to Animal Kingdom, specifically to the gift shop at Dinosaur, the ride. It was only a temporary thing, covering for someone who was out sick. I'd never worked there before. Didn't think much of it. Just another gig. Most of the job was stocking shelves, ringing people up, the usual. But Dinosaur has this weird energy. It's one of the older rides in the park, tucked away in Dinoland, and at night when the crowds are gone, the whole area feels empty. Not the usual Disney empty, where you still hear music and the hum of maintenance workers. I mean dead empty. Anyway, my last shift there, I was closing up alone. I had to restock a few things before I could leave. No big deal. Everyone else had clocked out. The store was quiet except for the soft hum of the AC. I finished folding some t-shirts, did a quick sweep of the floor, and walked to the back to grab my stuff. That's when I heard it. A low mechanical groan, followed by a deep, guttural screech. I froze. For a split second, I forgot where I was. It was late, I was tired, and the sound didn't register as normal at first. It sounded like some kind of animal. Deep, raw, and wrong. Then I realized what it was. The ride. They hadn't turned off the sound effects yet. Made sense. Ride ops usually shut everything down in phases. First the vehicles, then the animatronics, then the audio. Except the lights were already off, and when I glanced outside the shop, the whole area was pitch black. Not a single work light on. Something about that didn't sit right with me. I shook it off. Probably just bad timing. Maybe maintenance was still around, finishing up. I grabbed my bag, turned off the shop lights, and stepped outside. Pure darkness. Animal Kingdom is different from the other parks at night. Magic Kingdom, Epcot, even Hollywood Studios. There's always some kind of ambient light. Street lamps, neon signs, something. But Animal Kingdom, it goes completely dark. They keep it that way on purpose, for the animals. Dinoland, though, felt too dark, like the shadows were heavier than usual. I started walking toward the back entrance, the cast member exit. It's a short walk, maybe 2 minutes, but that night it felt longer. Then I heard it again, the same screech, louder this time, closer. I stopped, turned my head toward the ride building. I couldn't see anything, just the hulking outline of the show building against the night sky. But the sound, it wasn't coming from the speakers anymore. It sounded real, like something massive shifting in the dark. A shuffling noise followed, something dragging across the pavement. Slow, heavy. I wasn't alone. I picked up the pace. The screech came again, this time from right behind me. I ran. Didn't think, didn't look, just ran. I didn't hear footsteps chasing me, but I felt something moving in the darkness. A presence. Too big. Too close. I turned the corner, practically throwing myself at the cast member door. Swiped my ID so fast I nearly dropped it. The lock beeped, the door clicked open, and I slammed it shut behind me. Silence. Just the sound of my own breathing. I stood there for a minute, trying to process what just happened. Finally, I gathered myself and walked toward the break room. A ride operator was sitting there, scrolling through his phone. I must have looked shaken because he raised an eyebrow. You good? I hesitated. They didn't turn off the dinosaur sounds yet. He gave me a weird look. They shut everything off an hour ago. I didn't say anything. Just grabbed my stuff and left. Story 5. I used to work for Disney, not in the parks, but in one of the corporate offices in California. Every now and then, we'd get to visit Disneyland as part of team building or some special event, which honestly was just an excuse to skip work and have fun. But one of these visits burned something into my mind that I haven't been able to shake, even years later. We were getting a rare backstage tour of Disneyland, something not a lot of people get to see. It wasn't some official public-facing tour. This was a real behind-the-scenes look at the parts of the park that guests aren't supposed to see. Our guide was a manager who had been with Disney for years, and he knew every hidden tunnel, every out-of-the-way maintenance room, every access door that blended seamlessly into the theme facades. He told us stories as we walked. Little things about the park's history, weird cast member traditions, even a few ghost stories, though we all assumed they were just for fun. It was late afternoon when we ended up behind the Tower of Terror. The sun was low, turning the sky this deep, fiery orange. The air smelled like old pavement and fryer oil, and the sounds of the park, laughter, music, that constant hum of life, felt distant back there. It was weirdly quiet. That's when I saw it, a clothing rack, one of those metal ones on wheels, standing all by itself near the loading bay. And hanging from it, placed neatly in a row like they were on display, were about 10 Mickey Mouse heads, the big costume heads from the characters in the park. At first, my brain didn't register what I was looking at. I just stopped walking, my stomach twisting. The way the sun hit them, casting long shadows, making the eye holes look darker than they should have, it didn't look right. It didn't look like something I should be seeing. They weren't arranged haphazardly either. They were hung at perfect intervals, evenly spaced, too neat, too deliberate. The hooks they were hanging from were metal, hooked right into the fabric inside the heads. The ears slumped slightly, the open mouths frozen in identical wide grins. But what really made my skin crawl was that they looked used, worn out. Some had faint stains around the edges, smudges of dirt, or what I told myself was just sweat from whoever wore them last. But one of them had something else. Right under the left eye hole, a dark crusted streak, small but unmistakable, dried blood. I felt my breath catch in my throat. I turned to my coworker, standing beside me, and I could see it on her face too. She saw it. She saw what I saw. "Why are they just out like that?" she muttered, her voice low. I didn't have an answer. We weren't supposed to linger, but I swear, for just a second, I thought one of the heads shifted. Not much. Just a tiny movement, like it was swaying slightly. But there was no wind. Nothing to make it move. That's when our guide, the manager, noticed we had stopped. He followed our line of sight and saw what we were looking at. And his reaction? It's what still gets me all these years later. He froze. Just for half a second, a flicker of something crossed his face. Something like recognition, or maybe discomfort. Then it was gone, replaced by a forced, casual smile. "Ah," he said, clearing his throat. "Let's keep moving." That was it. No explanation. No joke. Just that quick look, that weird hesitation, and then moving on like it was nothing. We did move on, but I couldn't shake the feeling that we had seen something we weren't supposed to. Something that didn't belong. Story 6. I used to work at Disneyland. From 2007 to 2014, I was a cast member at Soarin' Over California, back when California Adventure was still figuring itself out. It was a good gig. The job itself was easy, the team was cool, and most of the time, it didn't feel like work. But there was one thing I could never shake. Everyone who worked Soarin' for long enough heard the stories. The ghost of a little girl on B-side. Supposedly, she had died in the parking lot before.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
DCA was built, though no one could ever say exactly how. Some swore they'd seen her standing at the bottom of the screen when the ride was running. Others heard her laughing in the empty queue after closing. I didn't believe any of it, not until I was alone in Tower one night. If you don't know how Soarin' works, it's basically a massive flight simulator. Riders sit in a giant mechanical lift system that raises them into the air in front of an enormous screen, where they fly over scenic landscapes. The ride runs on a cycle. Guests load in, the seats rise, the movie plays, and then the seats lower again. The whole thing is controlled from a small, dimly lit room called Tower, located at the back of the hangar. The tower operator is in charge of the ride, checking cameras, making sure everything runs smoothly, and watching for emergencies. The thing about Tower is that once a flight starts, you're locked in. The doors to the ride bay automatically close. The area goes pitch black, and the only way out is through an emergency exit that triggers a full stop. That night, I was the Tower CM for B-side. It was close to park closing, so it was just me and the load team, but once the flight started, I was completely alone in the room. I'd worked Tower 100 times before. It was normally boring. You sit there, listen to the same Soarin' soundtrack you've heard a million times, and wait. This time, something felt off. At first, it was just a vague sense of unease, like the kind you get when you feel like someone is watching you. I chalked it up to exhaustion. It was a long shift, I was tired, and I was probably psyching myself out because of the stupid stories. Then I heard the footsteps, metallic, slow, coming up the stairs below the screen. I froze. That shouldn't have been possible. The area beneath the screen is closed off once the ride starts. The only way in or out is through a locked maintenance door, and if that door had opened, the ride would have stopped automatically, but the ride was still going. I leaned toward the monitor, checking the cameras. Nothing. The footsteps continued, one step, another, clanging against the metal staircase, steady, unhurried. I turned in my seat, staring at the dark corner of the room where the stairs were. The feeling of being watched was overwhelming now. My pulse hammered in my ears. I told myself it was nothing, just my mind playing tricks. But then, as clear as day, I heard it. A giggle. A child's giggle. Right behind me. My body went ice cold. I spun around so fast I nearly knocked the control panel over. The room was empty. There was no one there. No one. The ride ended a few minutes later, but I couldn't move. I just sat there staring at the darkness near the stairs. My entire body locked up. The doors opened, the lights came on, and the ride operators came in like normal. I didn't say anything. I don't know why. Maybe because I knew they'd just laugh it off. Maybe because I didn't want to believe it myself. I never worked Tower alone again. Story 7, I worked at Disney World for 3 years, mostly in Magic Kingdom. And if there's one thing I can tell you, it's that people have no respect for the rules when it comes to grief. Everyone wants a piece of Disney to be part of their personal story, even when their story's over. You hear all the time about people trying to spread their loved ones' ashes in the parks, but what most people don't realize is just how often it actually happens. And I can tell you right now, it happens a lot. I worked the Haunted Mansion. You know the ride, dark corridors, eerie music, ghostly projections. A classic. It was my favorite ride growing up, and I was thrilled when I got assigned there. But working it, whole different story. Now, most people assume the creepy part of working at the Haunted Mansion is the atmosphere, or maybe some urban legends about ghosts. But the worst thing? The guests, the ones who sneak in their little plastic urns, thinking they're being subtle when they drop their loved ones into the ride's graveyard scene, thinking that's some poetic resting place. Let me tell you how wrong they are. It was a Saturday afternoon when it happened. The crowds were thick, the air sticky, I was stationed near the unloading area when I got the call over my earpiece. Code HEPA, graveyard. Repeat, code HEPA. I felt my stomach drop. Code HEPA meant one thing, human ashes, and it meant we had to shut the ride down immediately. I grabbed my radio and acknowledged the call, weaving through the exiting guests toward the graveyard section. The graveyard is one of the last scenes in the ride. Animatronic ghosts singing, tombstones shifting, spectral figures popping up from behind the graves. It's a fan favorite. When I got there, I saw another cast member already waiting, looking uncomfortable. She pointed silently toward one of the tombstones, where a fine gray powder coated the surface and trailed onto the floor of the ride. Jesus, I muttered. We couldn't just sweep it up. That was human remains. It had to be handled carefully, sanitized, removed completely. Otherwise, it could become airborne, and that was the last thing we needed. Guests inhaling some poor guy's grandpa. Security arrived fast. They always do for this sort of thing. A plainclothes security guy and two custodial workers, one carrying a special vacuum with a HEPA filter. That's how serious it was. They don't just wipe it up with a rag, they vacuum the dead. Guests started getting irritated when we stopped the ride. Over the speakers, the usual safety spiel looped. We seem to have hit a bit of a snag. Please remain seated. The ride will resume shortly. But we all knew the ride wouldn't be running for at least an hour. We had to figure out who did it. There were cameras everywhere. I went back to the monitors while security combed through footage. It didn't take long. There she was. Middle-aged woman, black sweater, seated alone in her doom buggy. I watched her on the screen as the buggy turned to face the graveyard. Her hands trembled as she pulled something from her purse. A plastic bag. She hesitated. Then a quick, desperate motion. She upturned it. A soft poof of dust scattered into the air. Some of it clung to the fake tombstone. Some of it drifted down, settling into the track. It took all of 3 seconds. Then she tucked the bag back into her purse, folded her hands in her lap, and stared straight ahead as if nothing had happened. Security grabbed her at the exit. I didn't hear the conversation, but I saw her face. The way her eyes were red-rimmed, her lips pressed together. She was crying, shaking her head. I felt bad for her. I did. But she had no idea what she had actually done. Here's the part people don't understand. Human ashes don't just disappear. They don't magically blend into the environment. They don't settle like fairy dust. They clump. They get into the machinery, into the tracks, into the air. They linger. I had a friend in custodial who once told me that no matter how well they clean, no matter how many times they ran the HEPA back over the scene, it never fully went away. There was always a trace, and sometimes in the days after a code HEPA, we'd hear things. Not ghostly whispers, not chains rattling, nothing that dramatic. But we'd hear the ride malfunction in ways it never had before. Figures not appearing when they should. Music skipping. Ride vehicles slowing down for no reason. And sometimes we'd hear reports from guests that they'd seen an extra figure in the graveyard. Not an animatronic. Not a projected ghost. A shadow standing just beyond the tombstones. Still. Silent. Watching. We closed the ride for almost 2 hours that day. By the time we reopened, the woman in the black sweater was long gone. Story 8. I used to work at Disney World in Tomorrowland. Specifically, I was a Space Mountain cast member. If you've ever ridden it, you know the drill. Dim lighting, eerie futuristic sounds, and that feeling of being in complete darkness while rocketing through space. It was a cool job, but if you worked it long enough, you started to see things. Weird things. Things that didn't make sense. This happened on a night shift, late, probably around 10 or 11 p.m. The parks were winding down, but Space Mountain was still running full speed. I was at load, the station where we get guests seated and send them off into the ride. Everything was normal. People laughing, kids excited, parents pretending to be braver than they were. Then this guy shows up. He was with a group of 3 other guys, all talking fast in what I think was Portuguese. Maybe Spanish? I don't know. He didn't look well. Sweating, fidgeting, staring at the track like it was something alive. His friends were trying to hype him up, patting his shoulders, laughing, but he just stood there, stiff as a board. Hey man, you okay? I asked. He glanced at me, then nodded, real quick, like he just wanted me to shut up. You don't have to ride if you don't want to, I said. His friends laughed and clapped his back, saying something I didn't understand. He swallowed hard, gave me a thumbs up, and climbed in. His hands were gripping the lap bar way too tight. I gave the all clear and sent them into space. Not even 2 minutes later, everything went to hell. A loud bang came through the radio on my hip, followed by the code for an emergency stop. I looked up and saw the main control panel flashing like crazy. That wasn't normal. Then my supervisor sprinted past me, heading straight for the emergency doors. Something was really wrong. A voice came over the radio. Ride stop! Guest missing. Repeat. Guest missing. I froze. That didn't happen. It just didn't. Space Mountain isn't like a normal roller coaster with open tracks. It's enclosed, dark, twisting. If someone somehow got out of the ride, they'd have to climb over rails, squeeze through tight spaces, and find a way down without breaking their legs. And that was if they could even see anything in the pitch-black darkness. But this guy, he was gone. The search. We shut the ride down completely, lights on, full stop, no music, no sound effects, just a silent, skeletal version of Space Mountain with the steel tracks twisting overhead. 50 of us, cast members, security, managers, scattered across the ride. We checked every emergency exit, every maintenance ladder, every side corridor. Nothing. He wasn't anywhere. His friends were losing it. They kept asking us where he went, if this was some kind of prank. Security questioned them, trying to figure out if he had a history of panic attacks or if he might have jumped off. But if he had, where was he? One of the supervisors checked the ride footage. I was standing next to him when he pulled it up. We watched as the guy rode up the first incline, gripping the lap bar so hard his knuckles were white. The camera caught his face perfectly, wide eyes sweating, mouth slightly open like he was whispering something. Then, halfway up the incline, he stood up. I felt my stomach drop. The footage showed him unbuckling his seatbelt, which should have been impossible while in motion, standing up in the moving car and stepping off, just like that. No hesitation, no panic. He just walked off into the dark. The camera didn't show what happened after that. He moved out of frame, and that was it. We checked the tracks. No blood, no impact marks. If he'd fallen, we would have found him. Injured, unconscious, something. But there was nothing. He never showed up at the exit, never called for help, never triggered any alarms. He just disappeared. Security eventually called it. The guy was gone. His friends were taken to the back for questioning. We were told to resume operations. I tried to forget about it. But then, about a week later, another cast member pulled me aside. Hey, she said, lowering her voice. I was working cameras last night. I nodded. She hesitated, looking around before whispering, I saw him. My heart stopped. What? She swallowed. Not like him, but dude, someone was walking the tracks last night. Bullshit. She shook her head. Swear to God, I saw a shadow on the cameras, right where he got off. I didn't say anything. Didn't want to say anything. I just nodded and walked away. I never checked the cameras, never asked about it again. I don't work there anymore. Story 9. I used to work at one of the stores in Disney California Adventure. It wasn't anything glamorous, just a regular retail job, folding shirts, ringing up guests, and straightening displays. The kind of work that kept my mind busy, but left my feet aching by the end of the night. I loved it, though. There was something about being there after closing, when the crowds were gone, and the park was eerily quiet. It felt like I had the whole place to myself. That night I was on closing shift. It was late, probably around 1 a.m. The last of the guests had been ushered out, and most of my coworkers had already clocked out, leaving just me and one other cast member, Lisa, finishing up. Lisa was in the back, counting tills, while I stayed up front fixing displays. I remember being exhausted. It had been a long day, and all I wanted was to get home, kick off my shoes and pass out. But closing meant making sure every little thing was perfect for the morning shift. and that meant fixing the lollipop tree, a huge display of oversized, swirled lollipops that stood in the middle of the store. I was careful as I rearranged them, making sure each one stood straight, their bright colors facing out. When I was satisfied, I stepped back to admire my work. Perfect. With that done, I turned my attention to the embroidery counter across the room. It was the last thing on my checklist, and then I'd be out of there. As I walked away, I heard it. Clunk. It wasn't loud, but it was distinct. A dull, solid thud against the tile floor. My stomach did this weird little flip, like the way it does when you miss a step on the stairs. Slowly, I turned back toward the lollipop tree. One of the lollipops, one from the very top row, was lying on the ground. Not tipped over, not rolling. It was just sitting there. I frowned. Maybe I jostled the display when I walked away. But no, this wasn't a rickety stand. The lollipops were packed tightly into the slots, and I had just adjusted them a few seconds ago. None of them had been loose. I walked back over and picked up the fallen lollipop. It was a big one, thick, heavy, the kind that shouldn't just fall on its own. My eyes flicked up to the slot it had come from, a full foot away from where it had landed. It hadn't just slipped out, it had jumped. A cold prickle ran down my arms. I stood there for a second, staring at the lollipop in my hand, trying to rationalize what had just happened. The air was still. The store was silent, except for the faint hum of the AC. I put the lollipop back and stepped away, watching the display like a hawk. Nothing happened. Lisa, I called, forcing my voice to sound casual. A few seconds later, she popped her head out from the back. Yeah. Did you hear that? She gave me a blank look. Hear what? I hesitated. I didn't want to sound stupid. I think one of the lollipops fell. Lisa raised an eyebrow. Okay? I gestured at the display. I just fixed them. They were packed in tight. Lisa shrugged, clearly unimpressed. Maybe it was loose. It wasn't. She sighed, rubbing her eyes. Dude, I don't know. Maybe the AC shook it loose or something. I looked up at the ceiling vent. It was across the room, nowhere near the lollipop tree. Even if there had been a gust of air, it wouldn't have been strong enough to launch a lollipop that far. But I didn't push it. I just nodded and muttered, "Yeah, maybe." Lisa disappeared back into the office, leaving me alone again. I turned back to the display, still feeling uneasy. I took a deep breath and started walking back toward the embroidery counter. Clunk. I froze. My heart slammed into my ribs. I turned around so fast I nearly tripped. Another lollipop. On the floor. But not in the same spot. This one was even farther away. I stared at it, my pulse thudding in my ears. I had just walked away. I was watching the display. I hadn't touched anything. There was no one else here. And yet, it had moved. This time, I backed away. My skin was crawling. I didn't pick it up. I didn't fix it. I just turned and walked. Straight to the office. Lisa, I said, my voice tight. She sighed. What now? Come here. She groaned but followed me out. When she saw the lollipop on the floor, she just stared. Then she looked at me. You're messing with me. I shook my head. I swear to God. Lisa's face twitched like she was about to make a joke. But something about my expression must have stopped her. She exhaled sharply. Okay, that's weird. I nodded. For a long moment, neither of us moved. Then without a word, Lisa walked over and kicked the lollipop under the display shelf. Problem solved, she said. I blinked. Are you serious? Look, she said, rubbing her arms. It's late, I'm tired, and I don't want to deal with this right now. But, she pointed at me. Did you see it fall? I hesitated. No, but then we don't know for sure what happened. I wanted to argue, but deep down, I knew she was right. I hadn't seen it move. I had just heard it. And that was almost worse. Lisa exhaled, shaking her head. Look, let's just finish up and get out of here. I didn't argue. I just nodded. We locked up fast that night. Neither of us talked much. And when we left, I felt like something was watching us. And I don't want to think about what would have happened if I had stayed to watch. Story 10, I used to work at Disney World, specifically in Magic Kingdom. If you've ever been, you probably don't realize it, but the whole park is built on a second level. Underneath, there's an entire network of tunnels called the Utilidors. Staff corridors, storage, offices, break rooms, all hidden away, so guests never see anything but the magic. I work night shifts pretty often, cleaning up and restocking before the park opened again. The tunnels are usually busy during the day, but at night, they're quiet. Too quiet. One night, I was down there alone. At least I was supposed to be alone. It was around 3 a.m. I was in one of the side hallways near the old costuming department, sorting through some uniforms that needed to be brought upstairs. The fluorescent lights buzzed, the air was thick with the smell of industrial cleaner, and every sound echoed weirdly. You ever been somewhere so quiet that your own breathing sounds too loud? That kind of quiet. I wasn't really paying attention at first, just doing my job, folding shirts, stuffing them into a rolling bin. Then I heard it. Footsteps. Slow. Deliberate. Just behind me. I turned fast, expecting to see someone. Another cast member. Maybe security. But the hallway was empty. I frowned, shook it off. Maybe it was just the sound carrying from somewhere else. Those tunnels do weird things with acoustics. Back to work. A few minutes later, I heard it again. Closer this time. Boots on concrete. I turned again. Nothing. I was getting that creeping feeling on my neck, like when you know someone's watching you. My gut told me to leave, but my shift wasn't over. I grabbed the last few costumes, shoved them into the bin, and pushed it toward the main hallway. The wheels squeaked, the only sound in the tunnels. Then behind me, more footsteps, faster this time. I froze. They stopped too. I swallowed hard, turned my head just slightly. Nothing. Just empty hallways stretching in both directions. I pushed the bin a little faster, another step, this time right behind me. I whipped around. Nothing there. No shadows. No people. No one. The air was heavy, charged. I could feel something. Not a person, not an echo. Something. I wasn't about to stick around and find out what. I grabbed my radio, my hands slick with sweat, and pressed the button. Hey, anyone near costuming? You guys hearing something down here? Static. Then after a long pause. Where are you? Near the old break room. Something's weird. Another pause. Then, get upstairs. Now. The way they said it, flat, serious. I didn't ask questions. I left the bin right there and booked it. As I reached the stairwell, I risked one last glance over my shoulder. Down the hallway, just past the edge of the light, there was a shadow. Not a person. Not standing on the floor. It stretched up the wall. Tall. Wrong. And then the lights flickered. I took the stairs two at a time, burst through the door into the stockroom above, and slammed it shut behind me. I don't know what I saw. I don't want to know. But I never worked alone in the tunnels again. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every every style, every home.